CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, writing most recently at Defining Ideas about a very large story being told on Wall Street these last years that has puzzled me. It's called ESG, Environmental, Social, and Governance, a form of investing that has been successful and increasingly dominates the conversation on Wall Street, hitting new highs all the time during the pandemic. I go to one particular part of ESG that translates into legislation proposed in the United States Congress. This is Elizabeth Warren, Senator from Massachusetts, senior senator, her Accountability Capitalism Act. I read the high points. Very large American corporations must obtain a federal charter as, quote, a United States corporation, which obligates company directors to consider the interests of all corporate stakeholders. Two, the boards of United States corporations must include substantial employee participation. Three, sales of company shares by directors and officers of United States corporations are restricted. Four, United States corporations must obtain shareholder and board approval for all political expenditures. Five, a United States corporation that engages in repeated and egregious illegal conduct may have its charter revoked. Richard, a very good evening to you. I believe that what we're reading here in the act not followed through yet is about as far from Milton Friedman as you can get. What is Milton Friedman's opinion of the mission of a corporation? Good evening, Richard.
Yes, hi. I mean, it's a little bit complicated, but the key words are your job as a corporation is to maximize shareholder profits, and everything else is to be put by the board. He says, obviously, when you do this, you have to do something that is within conformity of the law. And he also mentions something that's a little bit woolier about sort of in accordance with standard ethical and general practices, meaning no sharp practices or fraud. The question then people always ask about Milton is, well, why is it he's going to say this when there's so many things that should be done which have a social import or charitable significance? And Milton had two answers to that, and I think they were both important. One is that there is a very important function of a corporation is to manage to engage, get popular goodwill for the particular venture, and that requires that you do things in the community. So it's very common that you have members of your corporate team sponsor Little League baseball teams, that they manage to provide stuff to the schools. They essentially give relief when the things are very, very bad, so that there is a constant interaction. And the theory is that if you wish to have a reception from the local people, you have to give and get something in exchange. And the second point, I think, is more subtle, but I think he's actually right about this. He says, that, look, when you're starting to talk about more controversial type issues, there's a division of opinion. And if you wish to support some kind of controversial charity, say Planned Parenthood, and somebody else wants to support a different charity for the sanctity of life, having the corporation make these gifts either way is a huge mistake. So what happens is shareholders, they have their wealth, including the company shares, and they can make out of the wealth that they get from the company their private gifts without having to go through this collective situation. So his argument was that essentially where there's a unity of purpose within the corporation can do something for the benefit of all shareholders. But where there's a sharp difference of opinion as to what ought to be done, and then what happens is let that be done at the shareholder level, and you will get higher levels of charitable giving on the one hand, more active engagement in these various controversial pursuits than you will if you sort of make the corporation the repository of all things having to do with the success of the business on the one hand and with saving the world on the other. So he essentially has become the target of the ESG movement because his narrowest perspective means that you can save the world, A, by changing corporate governance, and B, by engaging in all sorts of activities on a social and environmental level that many of the shareholders oppose.
We come to 2019, before the pandemic. Business Roundtable, yes, an extremely influential body, announces that henceforward, the recommendation is corporations must look beyond shareholders to take into account a larger class of stakeholders. I believe that is what Senator Warren's proposal speaks to a larger share of stakeholders. And in this instance, are we talking about employees of the company or beyond employees, recipients of charity?
Well, first of all, it's no longer charity at this particular point, or good deeds. It's kind of deep social obligation. The conventional wisdom sort of examines four different classes of people, I think it is. You have, of course, the employees, but you have suppliers, and you have customers, and you have the general public at large. And the stakeholder situation says that what happens is that when people make their decision, what they have to do is to take into account all of these groups. Now, nobody would say that suppliers or customers are charitable type people, right? And the community benefits may not necessarily be helping people who are down on their luck. It could be stopping global warming or something of that sort. So you get this huge range. And then there is the following problem, and Elizabeth Warren understands that. How can you expect a board, which contains only representatives of shareholders, to be responsive of the issues of the interests of other groups? So her Accountability Act wants a huge chunk of these people to be employees. She doesn't tell you which employees, union employees, senior employees, right, professional employees, editors, who knows, on the board. And then somebody will come back, as I wrote shortly after, and say, well, if you're going to have employees on the board, why not have customers on the board? And why not have suppliers on the board? And why not have somebody from the public on the board? So after a while, the shareholders may be the minority interest. And then you have the following questions. We know that the shareholders can elect their board of directors, or the board of directors could appoint their successors. Things work different ways in different corporations. But who picks which employees, which suppliers? And now if you have to care about employees, just imagine what's going to happen. Somebody wants to unionize the plant. And is your duty to us as a stakeholder to the employees, do you have to allow for that union? Or do you say, you know, there's certain employees who are bitterly opposed to the union, so we have to fight it. If you're trying to do this kind of shareholder situation, what you discover very quickly is that trustees cannot have deep conflicts of interest and still do their job. Because if you owe fiduciary duties, you have to share information with people who, in fact, have interest adverse to one another. And then you have to decide on behalf of both of them when they constantly conflict. So one of two things happens. Either you can do anything that you want because it's always going to benefit this group or that group or the other group. Or you could do nothing at all because you're always going to start to offend somebody. So what happens is the Warren position was to take the control away from the shareholders to represent the stakeholders. The business roundtable does not want that. What they want to do is to have the directors take into account these other issues, even though they're going to only be elected by the shareholders. So you can get people coming forward with the obvious point. This is all a sham. What they're going to do is they're going to talk all sorts of social benevolence, but beneath it, it's going to be the same old business. My view is the same old business was what made America great. And that what happens is when you want to deal with bondholders and customers and so forth, they have their own representatives and you bargain at arm's length, which is what the Friedman position, which essentially combined with. It doesn't mean if you have debt holders and shareholders, and you're supposed to maximize the welfare of the shareholders, that the debt holders have no possession or protection. What happens is there's going to be somebody who will represent them, and then you'll have an underwriting, and you'll figure out how much you're going to charge for the bonds that you're going to issue to this particular corporation in an arm's length negotiation. And so each group has its own fiduciary, so you avoid the conflicts of interest, and you'll get better results than if you try to make everybody a one happy family. This is really a kind of quasi form of socialism where everything is put into a common pot. And it turns out that you have no clear delineation as to who should put in what and who should take out what. So the whole movement, if you actually go the whole nine yards, will be crazy. And that's one of the reasons why I think the Elizabeth Warren situation didn't take place. John, there was the following little time situation. She first proposed this in about 2018. She's a very powerful person, very persuasive in many ways, not to me, but to many others. And the thing from the business roundtable comes up in 2019. It, to some extent, it's clearly a defensive move. Right? We don't want this total terrible thing to happen to us, so we're going to concede. And then the moment they start to concede, she says, well, they've conceded the basic point that these American corporations are unjust, then you have to make these structural changes.
Let me read the details about how popular and successful is ESG. According to Bloomberg Professional Services, global ESG assets are on track to exceed $53 trillion by 2025, representing more than a third of the $140 trillion in projected total assets under management. It's, in other words, the train has left the station, Richard.
It's not that clear. Remember, these guys are not believers in this in the strong sense that Elizabeth Warren is. So what happens is you then engage in the following activity. You want to do something which will reduce good old-fashioned pollution, and you're going to sell that into the marketplace. This is the sort of thing that any corporation would have done 20 years ago. So what you do is you rebrand traditional assets as ESG assets so as to essentially announce that you've succeeded to them, and then having succeeded, please don't pressure us anymore because you've done everything that's needed. And so what it does, in effect, is it creates a little bit of a fudge accounting system when you start to look at these things a little bit more closely. It turns out it's very, very difficult to keep shareholders if, in fact, what you do is engage in activities which result in huge leakage. And so to some extent, there's the following ambiguity, which these numbers do not quite reveal or discuss. There are many things that you do in order to meet the ESG requirements, which make money for you anyhow. So a Milton Friedman type can say, I'm doing it to make the money. The ESG type can say, I'm doing it to save the world. But so long as there's the overlap between the two, then things are going to be okay. When it turns out that there's a real big differences between the two of these things, that's when you start getting a little bit scared. And this is very difficult to rate. So, for example, take something like this, an aggressive affirmative action program to have minority and female directors on corporations. This has been required by NASDAQ. Is it a disaster? Well, it could be. Is it a disaster? It might not be. Why is that? Many of these corporations decide that they want to do that in any event. And so if they're going to do it, what they'll say is, well, we're now ESG compliant. Is this a good thing or is it a bad thing? Well, I happen to think in many cases it could be very costly, because when you're dealing with a board, it's a very sensitive situation. If you make these boards too big, they can't really act. And if you make them small and you don't have people who can fit all the relevant specializations, you could get into trouble. If the pool of female and minority directors is small, that may or may not be true for some industries. And then the question is a real trade-off. Do you take somebody who's really good at cutting-edge technology to help guide the company on that issue, or you take somebody who's going to help you with gender equity? That becomes the trade-off. So it's extremely difficult when you look at these numbers to figure out whether the constraint really binds, as it does for some corporations, or whether it's just window dressing because they're going to do exactly the same thing anyhow. We don't know who the minorities are. We don't know which women are going to come into the business. It's quite clear if you were trying to think of a pool of female executives in 1970, this would be hugely onerous. But by the time you get to 2020, it's a huge situation, large number of women. The problem is they're not equally distributed across all professions. So the NASDAQ says you could explain your way out of it. They don't say who you explain, what explanations are sufficient, what happens if somebody thinks that the explanation is not sufficient. This is done at the highly global level. Right. And the strategy of the companies who are willing to play this game but unhappy about having to play this game is they want to leave the enforcement mechanisms completely murky so that they have the degrees of freedom that they think they need to do their technical stuff. So this is a long minuet that is going to be played, and it's not at all clear how it would come out. But at least for the present, I think you can say the performance of many of these companies is sufficiently strong that this is not going to be a calamity. But it can easily turn into such if, in fact, the people who run the system are not the guys from the inside, but are people like Elizabeth Warren, who start to put very, very strong demands. No American business could survive her Accountable Capitalism Act and still act as a sensible firm.
Richard, I want to leave time to discuss another well-known liberal voice in American politics, and that is Stephen Breyer on the Supreme Court. When we come back, Elizabeth Warren's Corporate Accountability Act is in the news and successful from one measure. What about the Supreme Court? From the liberal side, this is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.